Hello.
I'll make a motion to adopt the minutes of the June 9th meeting.
Didn't catch anything on it, so.
Yes.
Okay, all in favor?
Right.
All righty. Okay, delegation.
So, Stephen Bamber from Metrics for our financial statements.
Hello.
Hello. How's everybody doing?
Good. We also have Mayor LaChance is on the phone right around here.
Excellent.
Yes.
Does everybody have a copy of the statements in front of them, and or am I being shown on a screen right now?
Yes, you're on the screen right now. Did you send this? Actually, find the final draft as he sent this afternoon. If you can open this up.
I was going to say, I don't think I've seen that.
Yeah, it's not
Okay.
good because there's
Can
certain.
I, if
Yeah.
it's possible to share my screen, I can walk through and highlight kind of so it's easier to follow along with what I'm talking about. I think right now it's currently showing as the host disabled that option. Is that, are we able to do that? Or if not, I can just verbally go through it though.
Just 1 second.
Sure.
It may be best to do it verbally as Justin doesn't have it and isn't online.
Okay, that's fine too.
Yeah, oh, sure.
Okay. Everybody's ready? Should I jump right in? Excellent. So first of all, my name is Stephen Weber, and I'm here on behalf of Metrics Group. I've been the audit manager for the Village of CarMax for the last 5 years now, so I have a pretty good handle of how everything operates and the ins and outs and the inner workings of your guys' financial systems. With Annette's help, we've come to the final conclusion today of our draft package that I think you've seen. To what I heard Annette just alluding to a moment ago, I did make just a last little shuffle between categories. It's nothing with bottom line, it's nothing with any journal entries or anything, just trying to make them as perfect as I can. I'll walk through what that sounds like and what that looks like, but for the most part, you can have peace of mind that even if you're working off the statements from this morning and not this afternoon, there's the changes are very minimal. So it's just a matter of groupings rather than anything like that. Yes.
Just a quick question. Just question for Mayor LaChance. Do you have the statements in your in the agenda package that you received? Are you able to access it?
Sure, it is.
Okay. Thanks, Steve.
Okay, excellent. So I am able to share my screen. So I'm going to kind of double dip. I'll walk through it verbally, obviously, but sometimes it's nice to have a visual of where I am and what I'm talking about. So to jump right in, the first section I'm going to go through is the independent auditor's report. Now, this is going to be just inside the front cover. Obviously, there's lots of writing and lots of jargon to go through here, but I'm going to highlight just some of the key areas. This is a good area to look to if you're not a numbers person or if you're not someone who looks at financial statements every day like myself. If nothing else, you kind of want to look in this area as a counsel to ensure that everything went well. So this is where we as auditors provide our opinion on the matter or conclusion in this case. And I'm happy to report that in our opinion, the accompanying financials are going to present in all material respects fairly and accurately according to the standards that we must follow. In this case, that is the Canadian Public Sector Accounting Standard. So this is just the guidelines, the rules, the regulations. Everything must be in compliance and must be in adherence to these set of standards. And that's not unique to you guys. That's every single municipality across the country. So what that means essentially is everything looks great. Oh, yes, I saw a hand up.
No.
Oh, must be imagining it. So what that means is the part I always like to translate to English is when you see in all material respects, that just means that we cannot physically look at every single dollar. So we do use thresholds kind of for testing purposes. You would have seen that in our audit plan, which got sent out a little while in advance to give everybody an idea of what we're doing. But what that means is essentially we use roughly a guideline of about 2% of revenue. So everything that falls above that 2% of revenue category, we look at 100%. And then the smaller items we would look at kind of in spot checking and making sure that they're accurate throughout the process. But you can rest assured that everything that you're seeing in these statements that we go through today that you hopefully will approve by the end are going to be in compliance with the standards that we're shooting for. So that's the main thing. Now, how do we reach that opinion, the basis for opinion? just for peace of mind, that we as auditors are also held to a very strict set of standards. We don't come in and guess or have a guideline or an estimate of how much work to do or what to test or what we deem risky, things like that. It's very, very structured and set out in a very specific manner about what we do, thresholds we need to look at, confidence we need to get, and questions we need to ask Annette and the team and everybody like that. And that's the generally Canadian generally accepted auditing standards. That's going to be the same for any audit across the country as well. So with all of the main stuff out of the way, there are also a bunch of verbiage around responsibilities of management and the auditor's responsibilities. I'm not going to go through those in great detail as they're very, very generic. You're going to see basically the same wording in every statement that you pick up that's audited, and it just outlines everybody's roles and responsibilities throughout the process. Okay. Now, the two main financial statements we're going to look at today are going to be the statement of financial position and then the statement of net assets and accumulated surplus. So the first of which is going to be our statement of financial position. As a reminder, this is not the summary of everything that happened throughout the year. We're going to get to that one next. This is going to be your snapshot of the very last day of the year, in this case, December 31st, and comparing that to the exact same period last year. So essentially just how are things looking year over year as far as assets and liabilities go. As you can see here, as with most of our Yukon communities, it is a fairly simplistic balance sheet. There's not a whole lot going on, so that makes it our job easy and our life easy. As you can see here, the vast majority of your assets are going to be sitting in a cash or cash equivalent balance. So this would include not only your general checkings, but any of time you've the liquid money market funds as well, things like that. Anytime it's readily converted into cash, it's considered a cash item. As you can see here, due to the financial results and various things such as increase in deferred revenue, which I'll get to in a moment, as well as a decrease in accounts receivable, resulted in a large jump in the cash balances held as of December 31st. Short-term investments should be no surprise there. For the most part, it's just small little reinvestments of GICs, things like that. Accounts receivable. So this is an area from an audit standpoint that we always beat to death and we deem, I don't want to say risky, but has the chance to be risky. So our goal is to go in and go through everything with a fine-tooth comb and ensure that anything we're reporting in here as revenue earned but not yet collected is likely to be collected and or is valid. The last thing anybody in this room wants is to sign off and agree to statements that are showing large revenue numbers that in reality you have a 50% or less chance to collect. That's just inflating numbers and causing potential cash flow issues down the road. As you can see, we had a significant drop this year. That's to do with the CCBF, the Community Building Fund grant coming from the territorial provincial combination governments. And in this case, we had significant projects underway over the past couple of years that were all finally submitted this year and collected. So that's fantastic. Roughly about $760,000 in outstanding grants were sitting in receivables last year, part of that $895,000 that were collected and recognized and utilized this year. So if you're wondering, that gives obviously us a lot of confidence in the numbers we're seeing. As well, most of the things, you know, GST returns are going to be in receivables. Anytime there's grant funding, in this case, it's far lower, but anytime there's grant funding, that's going to be rock solid sources of receivable balances or income. Obviously, that once the territorial or the federal government is promising you money, it's just a matter of timing and submitting reports to getting it. It's not like that there's any risk with that. So you can have a lot of confidence that what you're seeing there is pretty guaranteed. So that's wonderful. Accounts payables, jumping to the liability side of things. Obviously, this is fairly straightforward, but this is going to be anything to do with payroll or utilities, anything like that that is to do with invoices relating to November, December that don't trickle in until January, February, and so on. That's going to end up in this pool. The vast majority of the increase year over year is going to be just due to timing. In this case, there was more heating fuel purchased in December compared to the same period last year. Again, it could be just coincidence, could be colder. It doesn't necessarily matter, but we go through all of that again very closely. And from this standpoint, we also audit all of the bank statements up until this meeting. So you can have a lot of peace of mind that we go through everything up until we sign off on these to ensure nothing significant has been missed or slips through the cracks or anything like that. Anything that's related to 2015 has been picked up and is being shown in here. Deferred revenue. So this is going to be anytime you have your funding coming from a third-party source, primarily in your guys' case, going to be the territorial or federal governments in which there's strings attached, but we have not utilized them according to the agreements. The vast majority of both years and related to the increase is going to be the Housing Accelerator Fund grant. Obviously, that has significant annual payments of over $500,000 a year, of which very little was used in 2024. It just kind of got started. And then this year, although it picked up steam, still only about $170,000 was utilized this year, which resulted in another large increase to our deferred balance. So you guys would have a better handle as to your plans and when you plan to utilize that and work that balance down, but it is a multi-year grant. So I do not anticipate there being any issues if it's going to take a couple of years to work that down or utilize those funds. And in fact, I know in that banking that we've already looked at, you've received your 2026 payment already. So I believe as of, you know, talking today, we have over $1 million sitting in deferred related to that grant alone at this point. Again, you guys would have a better handle on how that's planning to be spent and utilized, but that's all under in compliance with the agreement at this point. So that looks fine. Asset retirement obligations, again, just a quick reminder on those. That's related to the landfill, and that's 50% portion, as YG has agreed to split that down the middle with you guys when the time comes. A friendly reminder on that, notes are when the closure and the monitoring after the closure has to happen. So that's granted going to be years and years away. And we'll kind of get to that, how that is an accounting estimate in later in the presentation when I go through the audit findings report. But for the most part, they just want to ensure that some form of liability is being recorded. So there's no shock, whether it's in 5 years, 10 years, 50 years in this case, when the time comes to close that, nobody can claim that there was no planning or no idea that that was coming. Okay, so when we're looking at our net financial assets, that's going to be your financial assets or your liquid assets or cash receivables investments, less what you're currently owing for a net financial position of $2.7 million, which as you can see is pretty much exactly in line with last year. You can have a lot of confidence that that's a strong number. That tells me as an auditor that the village is in good financial condition and everything is you know, in a strong position in that sense. So your non-financial assets is the last category we're going to go through here. These are going to be your non-day-to-day spending or collecting items, vast majority of which is tangible capital assets. So this would be anything like your roads, your machinery and equipment, vehicles purchased by the community, water and sewer infrastructure, wells, landfill upgrades, things like that are all going to find their way into here. As you can see, it decreased this year. This was as a result of roughly $500,000 in additions, offset by about $1.4 million in amortization. And again, we'll get to the amortization in detail, but as a reminder, this is not a cash item or a check going out the door. This is going to be related to simply an estimate of assets aging and for accounting purposes. And to be in compliance with those standards I referenced earlier, we do need to ensure that, we need to ensure that those are essentially being picked up and we are accounting for everything getting a little bit older and a little bit closer to replacement dates. Okay, so, and then we have our deposits, which for the most part is your insurance deposit with the AYC insurance membership. And then prepaids is very minimal. All in all, you have non-financial assets of $3.9 million, which again is pretty similar to last year, for an overall accumulated surplus of $42.7 million, which we'll get to in a little bit more detail after the next slide. I did go through that fairly quickly, but I think everything was fairly straightforward this year. Does anybody have any questions or concerns before I jump to the next page? Okay, not seeing any. And feel free to save questions for the end. I'm happy to answer as a package or as a whole or in summary type as well. Okay, so whereas the last statement was the comparison of the last day, the closing day of the fiscal year, and comparing that to the prior year, this one is going to be our statement of operations and accumulated surplus, which is going to be our summary of all the activity that happened throughout the year, both on the revenue and the expense side, comparing that to both prior year and to budget. So as you can see, I always like to kind of start as a whole and then work my way back when it comes to this statement. And you can see here, the council has budgeted for roughly $3.8 million in revenue, and actual is roughly $3.7 million. All in all, that tells me that things were very, very close to what we anticipated, and why there is a variance is actually very easily explained, and we'll go through that in a moment. Government transfers, obviously, that's kind of tied to our deferred revenue. That's going to be anything external. The vast majority for you guys and all Yukon communities that I audit is going to be that block funding, which wonderfully is allowed to be used on anything and all things. So that's kind of like your general operating fund, which is going to be the majority of that, as well as anything that comes in with, you know, your REC program grants and that housing accelerator fund, as I mentioned. You get fire smart grants, water well monitoring grants, anything like that. And all of that is going to be related to that deferred revenue I mentioned. So obviously not a one for one, because you guys get some grants that were unanticipated throughout the year, which is pretty normal. But when you're wondering why it came in less than what you anticipated, the vast majority of that is going to be related to the portion that we deferred. Obviously, budgets are typically based on grants you expect to come in. And then once you don't spend it, if you don't spend it, it gets moved up. And that's kind of the vast majority of what's going to factor in there. Taxation, grants in lieu. This is an area that we would not expect to deviate much from budget or from prior year, as a community such as CarMax or most of my Yukon communities are not having massive developments every year. The assessment values are not swinging within the year. So once the council sets the budget and the tax mill rates, we do not expect it to deviate much from that. And as you can see, it does not. That's fantastic. Sales and user charges, again, this is where you're going to find all of your things, such as landfill tipping fees, anytime you do water sales, recreation facility charges, things like that are all going to fall under this category. And you can see here the vast majority of the increase over last year was very easily explained. We had significant landfill additions this year to a mining corporation, from what I saw, both in September and October. Some increased activity there. You guys earned about an additional 60,000 from what I could see, as well as we did have a brand new agreement with the First Nations in the area to 50% cost share the operations of the pool, which was new this year. So between those two items, pretty much on the nose makes up the $120,000 increase we're seeing over prior year. Other income. So these are kind of our catch-alls. These are our recycle revenues, odds and ends for one-off contracts or things like that. And when you guys get hired to use your equipment, anything like that, that would fall under there. Anytime it doesn't fit nicely into a major category, as you can see, very consistent with last year and the year before, or in budget, sorry. Interest. If you're wondering why it's down from last year and prior year, despite the significant cash increase, this is a twofold explanation that's fairly straightforward. The vast majority of that increase to the cash balance was not held throughout the year. First of all, you guys get your grant funding and a few other things that end up in the deferred revenue or that large receivable that was collected. It gets collected throughout the year, towards the end of the year. So sometimes that increased cash balance could be inflated when you're just looking at it on a one-off, as well as across the board, all my communities, just the nature of the world today is the interest rates being recognized are slightly lower than we were seeing in the last couple of years. So nothing really that the village could have done about that. It's, again, I'm seeing it all over the place. So that explains the drop when it comes to interest revenue there. Jumping over to the expenses, again, when I like to look at the major things at the bottom first, so you can see here that council had budgeted $3.7 million in operating expenses, and in actuality, it came in at $3.7 million. I don't know if I've ever seen an operating expense budget that close on, you know, just over $3.7 million. You guys had a variance of about $1,400, which is maybe a record. But all in all, there is some variance within the group, so I'll go through those quickly. Recreation, again, some of the increase in budget was related to an expected or a hope of hiring more additional staff in the recreation department, whether that be the rec center, the arena, the pool. That came in quite a bit under budget compared to actuals, more in line with last year. I know there was a maternity leave that was accounted for, as well as some positions that didn't quite get filled. So when you're looking at the salaries year over year, they're very consistent, but you did come in quite a bit under budget when it came to that. As well as just repairs and maintenance in the rec area department. There wasn't a whole lot of major ones needed this year. So that also came in slightly under budget. One of the areas that I kind of adjusted this morning just to ensure that we had it as accurate as we could. So if you're looking at this portion and you're seeing slightly different numbers than in front of you, the overall totals are all the exact same. I didn't adjust that. I just fluctuated between these two departments. So your environmental health is going to be anything related to landfill, recycle, wastewater, anything like that. And I shuffled a few of the costs related to those projects down into there. And you can see once I did that, based on reports that Annette sent me this morning and the allocations, we are within a couple thousand bucks of last year. Now, I do not adjust the budget for the same thing. Now, I think this year council budgeted all the environmental services within maintenance and supplies. Now, I would recommend splitting them back out if you haven't already done so for 2026. These are very distinct departments and they are required to be displayed separately. That being said, if I need to do this same idea and shuffle it next year, that's fine. It just will not follow suit in the budget. If anybody was to go look at this budget note, it does identify that the budget is unaudited. We do not examine that. You guys can set budgets however you want. We don't need those, don't need to be in compliance with the other stuff. So that's kind of, if anybody is wondering why that's so different. The vast majority of that is just due to allocations and how that's being spread out. I think all the budget ended up in maintenance this year, whereas the costs need to be in order to be in compliance, need to be shuffled between the departments. So with that being said, all of when you factor that in, everything's actually quite close when it comes to environmental health and safety, or the environmental health, sorry. As far as maintenance, the vast majority of the increase over last year is very easily explained. We had our grant-funded streetlight projects. There was some put up on the highway and some related to the landfill. Now, those are not TCA assets because the village does not own those streetlights. Typically, ATCO will own them, even though they charge you to put them up. So that ends up in this category, but you can rest assured that all of that is still grant-funded and is part of why this is so much higher up here this year. As well as there's a few little odds and ends in operations and maintenance, equipment being repaired and arm kits and things like that being needing to be addressed on the maintenance equipment. And as I mentioned, the reason it's under budget is the vast majority of that difference, roughly 100,000 or so, should be sitting down here with the environmental. Maybe a little bit more, in fact. General government, again, came in under both budget and prior year. Majority of that is going to be related to salaries and wages as well. That came in under budget, as well as we had a higher consultant budget this year or professional fee budget. And only about half of that was needed in the year just based on the way the projects progressed and things like that. But all in all, nothing too out of the ordinary or surprising when it came to that. Fire services, again, a little bit higher than budget and for prior year. A good chunk of that was to do with the Fire Smart, the fire grant for improvements at the hall. You guys had a leasehold improvement grant came in from YG in order to rent it out. They wanted you guys to make some upgrades. So the costs would be in here and the offsetting grants, once again, would be sitting up here. So all of those matched together and we made sure that was the case in order to recognize them. But that was part of the increase that was over prior year and over budget. And then as we get down to the smaller stuff, again, easily explained, the vast majority of the economic development increase over budget and over prior year was related to that housing accelerator fund. As I mentioned, I think it was budgeted as a capital project or in the project budget, which is why it doesn't show up here, even though it's an operating expenses. So all the costs go here. Anytime you dish out grants related to that or have your consultants with respect to the planning or development of the additional grant usage of the grant, it's going to end up in this category. Again, all that grant offset is going to be up here as well. So anything to do with the operating with that, it's more of a budget variance or a classification variance, but that's where that project is picking up. Obviously in the past or last year when it just got started, it didn't make that much of a fluctuation. That being said, this year, and as it progresses forward, as I mentioned, I think you guys have over $1 million to deal with in that deferred for 2026. We may want to consider, if you haven't already, moving that housing accelerator fund project spending in the budget line, just so there's not giant variances. But if there is, that's fine. They're easily explained. So that's more of just a food for thought. And then with that, so you can see here our operating surplus resulted in a expected surplus of 160,000 compared to an actual of 75. Vast majority of that, as we already kind of went through, savings in various departments and grant funding being deferred, little things like that. But for the vast majority of that, that's very, very close. So you can rest assured that that's a strong financial result. Other areas of revenue and expenses, this is where we add our capital related items or our one-off items. The reason we do that is because they are basically year by year projects or they fluctuate dramatically and we don't want to skew the general operations as far as planning purposes. And the vast majority of these items are always going to be a one-for-one TCA and grant funding cross-off. So there's no real need to inflate both of the operating items. It's nicer to keep them separated. So you can see here, roughly, we spent $377,000 on projects in the year that ended up in TCA or capital assets and that were grant-funded CCBF primarily in this year. We did have a few sales of assets as we disposed of them and made a little bit of money on those. And then the big one would be our amortization. And as I alluded to on the last page, this is not a cash item. This is simply us factoring in your TCA, your capital assets getting older every year that goes by. We need to devalue them just to ensure that we're not keep buying or building a road or a building, and then 50 years later it's showing on the books for the exact same value when that's not the case. So although when we get to the bottom here, the annual operating deficit will be 975,000. It is always important to keep in mind that that is an accounting deficit because, as I mentioned, that amortization number is non-cash. So if you factored that back in or offset that against each other, you guys did actually run a cash surplus. And obviously that would align with our increased cash balances. So no concern on that front for us. If that was, a larger deficit than what we were seeing in amortization, that'd be a different story, but definitely not the case. So no concern on our end. Any questions, concerns before I jump to the next page? Okay. So the only other one I'm going to go through on the statement today is going to be this one because one, it's new, and two, it actually presents nicely. So this shows you how your unrestricted surpluses that we were just showing you on the last page, how this is divided within your organization or your village. So the vast majority of our equity is obviously going to be related to capital assets. So of the 42 million, 39 million, 39.9 million is going to be related to those TCA assets that we mentioned above, as well as Council does have restricted reserves of 2.5 million. Now, you can see which reserves there are and the balance of each in note 8. If you guys would like to make any additional transfers, either in or out for these statements, that you're more than welcome to do so. We can approve with a transfer, or you can just save it for 2026 if you feel like you want to. It's completely up to you. And then unrestricted is the balance at the end of all of it that ends up essentially with no strings attached. This is the money that could be utilized in any department category or area that is needed next year. And that's kind of how that shakes out at the moment. Any questions about that? Okay, I'm almost done. Now, when it comes to the financial statements, obviously there's significant notes and schedules and all the stuff. I mean, they're 22 pages long and everything is useful and necessary in there. That being said, I'm not going to go through them in detail today because I pretty much did verbally with that was part of my presentation. It just provides all the context to everything that I've kind of talked through. So if you have any questions or concerns about any of the notes or schedules specifically, I'm happy to go through them. But if nobody does, then I'm going to move on to the next letter at this point. Okay. The next document that comes with the financial statements is just our audit findings report. And this just kind of summarizes everything that we want to bring to your attention, what we found, any news and notes, things like that. So as we can see here, our significant findings from the audit. The first category we always look at is our significant deficiencies in internal controls. Now, what this means is I kind of alluded to it right at the beginning, but we like to look at everything over a certain threshold that we deem would be relevant to council's decision making. But at the same time, we like to, for major areas such as payroll, purchasing, revenue collection, we look at the process themselves. So what we'll do is we'll take a grouping or a sampling of transactions and we'll go all the way from the beginning, whether that's revenue initially coming in or a bill initially coming in, and we trace it all the way through the stages of the process to ensure that there's no weaknesses, no flaws, no areas that, something could slip through and somebody could be paying themselves or somebody, a staff member can change a payroll rate and pay themselves whatever they want. And we're happy to report to no surprise that our audit did not reveal any significant deficiencies in internal controls. Everything looks good. Everything looks organized. Approvals are where we expected them to be. All the steps are being followed, everything like that. So that's excellent. Qualitative aspects of the accounting practices. So this is just an area where it's a fancy way of saying we like to disclose anytime there's estimates involved. I kind of already went through two of them, but just a quick reminder that amortization, that non-cash item that I mentioned, is obviously an estimate. We use our best guess. We use our guidelines, both with the village's policies as well as those accounting standards I mentioned, to make sure nothing's out of whack. But at the end of the day, you hope a vehicle is going to last, say, 10 years, but it could last 20. It could last 3 if it's a lemon. So there is an element of estimation when it comes to that. And this is just factoring that in. Asset retirement obligation liability. So this is related to the landfill. Again, like I mentioned, we do get all the engineering reports and we go through all the assessments and we make all the calculations using inflation and all this good stuff. But at the end of the day, when something's going to happen 40 to 50 years from now, I mean, a million things could change. So we just like to disclose that these are educated guesses. They are estimates. We are required to make them, but obviously there's an element of unknown to them. Adjusted differences during the audit. So just for peace of mind, we always like to outline how many changes we made from when we start to when we finish. In this case, this year, we had around 22 adjustments. I think that's fairly similar to last year. I know a number of these, and I'm going to work with Annette to try and clean that up, are related to journal entries either being missed or forgotten or done backwards from last year. So it's not like I'm having a significant number of entries that I'm having to make because nobody thought of them. It's more of entries from last year on the roll forward either didn't get made or they got lost in the shuffle or maybe just made a little bit wrong. I think there was four or five related to that, as well as I know a lot of them this year were around those CCBF grants as they piled up for a few years in accounts receivable. Thankfully, that portion has all been sorted out. And as I mentioned, has all been collected and corrected now. So I have a lot of confidence that that portion is going to definitely be a one-time thing. Unadjusted differences. So this is anytime we find small errors that we need to note to counsel, but are maybe not significant enough to bother going back and restating prior numbers or anything like that. But in this case, we did not find any such by our firm. And I'm happy to report that anytime we did find anything of significance to change, obviously we did, and they're part of those 22 adjustments identified above. Significant difficulties. I think it's pretty straight or pretty obvious at this point, but we had none. Everything went really well. We appreciated Annette's help throughout the process. She was forthcoming and gave us anything we need and answered all of our questions, even though there's 5 million of them, but she's always very gracious with her time and all of that. Now, one thing that will be coming later, but is not of major concerns, is a management recommendation letter. Now, this is something we send to all of our clients every year, just areas for improvement, things to consider. But as a counsel, you can rest assured that anything of importance, anything major would end up on this letter. So there's nothing that you need to be worried about or concerned about or hesitant to approve these until you see the other one. It's definitely nothing of major concern. Like I said, just areas of improvements. And with that, before I conclude, we always just like to outline that we are completely independent of the village. We have no stake in the results being fantastic or terrible or anything in between. You know, nobody on council is connected family-wise to anyone at our firm or anything like that. We are completely independent. So with that, I'll kind of conclude and thank you everybody for, like I said, all the hard work. And we appreciate working with your organization, your village. And I'll open the floor to any and all general specific questions that anybody has. I'm happy to go through now.
I don't have any questions, but I just want, like, thanks for the summary. It's great. you make it very understandable and you go through it quickly. Thank you.
Excellent. Lots of practice translating to English.
Yeah. That was English?
As close as I awesome. Can get it.
That's awesome.
I just have a question, Steve. So I'm just wondering, just in general, based on what you've seen with the village in past years, as well as the work that you do with other municipalities as well too, in general, is there any low-hanging fruit you can identify in terms of maximizing revenue or minimizing expenses going forward? I think this is great. Like, I mean, it looks really good for 25, and hats off to Annette for the great finance work, as well as yourselves for the auditing. But I'm just wondering if you have any kind of general advice on that front based on what you've seen with the village's numbers and kind of what you've seen in yeah. general too.
No, that's great. I think the biggest recommendation, especially with specific to CarMax, but I see it in other ones, and especially this is a great year for it, is just staying on top of your grant reporting. Because like I know, and I've been working with Annette because a lot of this was predates her, but it's been a UConn theme that everybody doesn't like to submit claims or submit progress reports until the project's completely done. And now CCBF absolutely does not require that. You can submit quarterly on where you're at and what you've spent and what you need. And then it just keeps things far tidier. It keeps your cash flow coming in. And it, for example, like it's not wrong, but it's definitely not normal to have, you know, I think before this year or during 2025, you had seven projects that spanned over the last 4 years. I had to go back to 2021 to reconcile it all, that essentially weren't submitted until it was done because either are multi-year projects or whatever. And all of a sudden you get this massive windfall of, $1 million, or I think it was even more, that came in this year. And then we have to sort through it and make sure they match. And again, nobody's fault and it's an easy fix. But what came out of that is we found out that one of your projects got claimed under two separate grants twice. So now, I mean, it's not the wrong thing. So essentially we set some of that money in deferred and it's going to have to be sorted out with CCBF, but it's because that was related to, there was a project that essentially two separate people over 2 years, because there was some turnover in the accounting staff, submitted it under different projects. They both got approved. And then one was submitted and claimed in 2022. And then another one in the cleanup got submitted and claimed in 2024 and from different sources. So I think the biggest thing that I would recommend is just staying on top of those. And this is a great year to start that, because as I alluded to, we went from, 900,000 or 850,000 related to these projects that had built up over all the years to now it's completely even by the time we're talking right now. So if it's just kept on top of right now, you are perfectly, fresh start moving forward. And just, I know, especially dealing with Annette the last couple of years, I think you have the person in place to do it. She's very organized and knows her stuff. So I think if you kind of stay on top of that, then it just keeps everything organized and clean and keeps your cash flow coming in better. Because I know a couple of those projects, you guys had essentially paid the majority of it in like 22, 23, and then you didn't collect the money until now in 2025. So essentially the village has been front paying or front loading a project for like 700 grand. And there's no need to do that. Like, it's not wrong and you guys are in a good cash position, but it's just unnecessary. So that's my biggest takeaway, I would say, is just to try and stay on top of that and feel free to submit those projects at least on an annual basis.
Thanks. That's great. Appreciate that.
Anything else? Okay, excellent. I will sign off for now and I'll follow up tomorrow if these get approved. And if anybody has any other questions or concerns, you guys just let me know. But thank you for your time and enjoy the rest of your evening.
Thanks. Good job.
All righty. Still going to make any motions to file or anything?
That's down at 8. Way down at 8.1.
Yeah, we can move it to the delegation because we were not sure he's going to join. We can do the motion.
Okay. I'll make a motion to approve the auditor's report for the 2025 financial statements.
Second that motion.
Hey, do we have any correspondence? None.
We have to have an all in favor.
Oh, sorry. Okay. For the auditor's report, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right. Now we can move on to correspondence.
Yeah.
We have no correspondence. All right. So we'll move on to report. Council activity.
I can start because I have nothing to report. Yeah, since our last meeting, I've done nothing.
Other than work in the fire department, keep busy over the fire department. No, I don't have anything. You have anything, Justin?
Yeah. My report. Just want to recap over the few weeks here. As everybody's aware, I am in Ottawa and representing not only the Canadian Rangers, but Village of Carmax. Just some highlights here that I am participating in the National Sentry Program of Deployment for the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier. This is a sovereignty piece for Northern Sovereignty. the national representation. It's proud to I'm proud to be here representing not only the Rangers but the Termits and Yukon Territory, but our national police. Things are going very well. Some engagement pieces here in Ottawa that I've reached out. Meet with Senator Pat Duncan at the Senate building, and he was greatly honored to meet not only me but the other Rangers that I brought with me, and just on how Senate works and government and how things are procured. Also connected with Parliament. His family. He did confirm that he will personally reach out to us when he is back at home in Yukon on some things that are related to the Village of CarMax. Yeah. So, and a few other things. I'd like to say locally, congratulations to the village and the staff and on the opening of our second year. With the joint agreement with the Sandler CarMax First Nation on the pool opening this year. I seen the post come today, so let's get into the pool season. I'm excited to come back and you know get in there myself with the kids and yeah have some fun. I also wanted to just recap or see what the village or the council plans are with Canada Day coming around the corner, what council or the staff or the rec, all the departments, kind of what we're going to do or if those things have been talked about. Yeah, I'd like to hear about that. Also, just I've seen a few posts here about the wildfire. It's a 10 hectare fire just like north of us. It's classified as being held, but just so everybody's aware about the air quality conditions. And if you have problems, please reach out to the people that you need to in healthcare. Obviously, the flood mitigation pieces that we're working on, the snow melt, everything is kind of officially eased away. I'm glad we made it through that piece of the season where everybody was kind of on the edge of their seats. Yeah, but I thank everybody for their patience on that. And yeah, I also like to continue to honor the passing of our former Mayor Lee Bodie and the upcoming event for a tribute to his life and successes that he has left the village in. And yeah, so looking forward to attending that in July. But other than that, that's all I have right now.
Just so the air quality is pretty good right now. We've been fortunate, knock on wood. Yeah.
That's exciting. I thank the admin and rec and obviously Matrix for the work that they do every year. It's very satisfying to hear that we're very stable, and that's the avenue and what we've been working to achieve those stabilities in finance. So yeah, great work to that and thanks to the office for that.
All right.
Okay. So for my report, so just a few notes of important dates and events. So Canada Day celebrations obviously on July 1st. And just to answer the mayor's question, I have been in touch with Chanel, who's informed me in general that everything's all set to go for Canada Day. We have a management roundtable tomorrow, so I can get more specifics tomorrow, and I can send that out to do a follow up, send it out to council to let people know kind of what the specific plans are. But I've been informed that it is it's all set, good to go, and ready to roll on July 1st. Celebration of life for former Mayor Lee Bodie. July 4th. So that's on a Saturday. So it's following candidate. And then the next regular council meeting will be July 7th. Over the last 2 weeks, continued to do familiarization with key projects, files, and systems, just going over the history of things and trying to, yeah, look at different dynamics, how things are, you know, how the dots connect. Participation in the Fire Hall O&M assessment with senior staff. So we, a number of us met to talk about some of the O&M, some of the repairs that were suggested for the new fire hall, looking at things that we may want to move forward with, high priority versus things that were kind of medium priority. We've decided to go ahead with the high priority pieces, there was some talk about service agreement, but we didn't think that was something that we wanted to pursue at this time to lock into anything. Just kind of looking at you know, doing the repairs that are absolutely necessary at this point. Correspondence with residents on various topics related to the community. This is kind of an ongoing piece, but you know, talking with a few people. So I attended the public service barbecue on Friday. So met a few people there, especially people really that were involved with food security and the greenhouse. And so there's some interesting conversations on that. There's a continuous conversation about the food bank as well as animal care and control, but I can talk about that a little bit more later. Emergency preparedness, so continue to do flood watch and response coordination with all the various entities, EMO, as well as the fire chief has been involved in those conversations too. Had a number of meetings with YG. So one was on June 10th about funding programs. There was also, so that was kind of just an overview of some of the funding programs that are available right now. There was a pool staff orientation. So I met with the pool staff on June 11th and got a tour of the pool, got to talk with them and see what they were doing with the pool, and also being able to connect them with a number of other staff to help kind of move progress along. There was a meeting with YG Infrastructure Development Branch. So it was a DMAF engagement debrief on June 16th. That was with Rick Kent, the manager of IDB, talked about the engagement on May 20th, as well as kind of follow up on that, what might be needed, as well as some of the concerns that were raised during the engagement from contractors, and just how we could do a bit more on that front, not just from a DMAF point of view, but from a higher level as well too, to get a better sense of what some of the issues from the contracting community are and how IDB can address those or work to address those with other within community services as well as other branches of YG.
You cut off. Must have got cut off. Did you get cut off?
Yeah, sorry.
There was a meeting with Gina Mark, so our consultants with the HAF project. We had about an hour and a half conversation. So Prince Annette and I met on June 17th and talked about the last intake and just some of the reasons why some of the barriers to accessing the HAF funding. It was discussed, and where we landed was that more research is needed with to do follow up with the banks about their policies and basically the realities of community living. And so I've volunteered to go in and speak with all five of the banks to kind of get a better sense of a better snapshot of their policies and why things aren't working as well with HAF as they should. And hopefully we'll be able to maybe come up with some strategies and potentially some advocacy or some discussions with government about about how these funding programs are designed. I don't know if it'll help in the short term, but you know, there may be some things that we might be able to do on that. So that's something that that is in the works. There's a meeting with UConn Community Affairs on June 18th. So just updates on a number of things. I received a number of emails from Arbor today about just connecting me with different...
June or July 18th?
June 18th.
June. What date are we on?
It's 23rd.
Oh, you had the meeting.
Yeah,
upcoming meeting.
No. I was just on Friday. But there was a number of contacts that she put me in touch with. So I've got some follow-up to do with forestry, energy, highway public works. But it's great to be able to, just really commend Arbor for being able to be that conduit. It's been really helpful to connect with other YG departments. And then correspondence with LCFN executive director. So there's been some back and forth between Kelly and I, we have a planned meeting on Thursday. And so I'm going to be bringing a number of things forward, to that we can discuss. It's been a little while since we had a chance to connect, including potentially looking at dates for the next joint council meeting and bouncing around ideas for agenda topics. So that might be something that that would be good to also kind of just I can bring that back to council based on kind of what she's seeing, and then we can, I guess, move forward on that. And then also just ongoing projects, review of the emergency plans and recommendations for closer alignment. So at the last joint council meeting in March, both councils wanted to look at emergency planning and seeing how they could merge a bit. And so right now I've taken a preliminary look at it. Blake, so the fire chief, is looking at this as well right now too. And so he's coming up with some suggestions that we're going to be discussing later this week. So more on that to come. There's a review of the strategic plan. So there's a draft that was presented by Jordan. So I'm currently reviewing that right now, and I'll be coming back to council once we have some of the wrinkles ironed out, grammar and whatnot. So that'll be being shared quite soon. And then enhancing village communication tools and structures. This is also ongoing. You know, Prince is doing work on this as well too. So we will be bringing something forward again soon. Follow up on animal care and control initiatives. So there's ongoing research on this, looking at what we can do based on the resolution that was passed in the AYC forum in Watson. And then again, just research on mortgage and loan policies to assist with half uptake. That's going to be ongoing probably next week sometime. So a number of these things are in motion, but I'll have a lot to report on for the next council meeting. That's my report.
I have a question.
Yes.
So in regards to the banking and the financial stuff for the app funding, is there some advocacy we could do with the UConn Housing Corporation to maybe alleviate some of that pressure that's more adjacent to the quick turnaround type of thing, or if we have something in place already? Because I remember in those meetings that UConn Housing presented that there might be some options for you to sort of answer landowners to kind of jump in to some financial help
now. Yeah, that's a great question. So during the meeting that we had, that was one of the things that was discussed. We talked about some of the programs that exist right now. Our consultants didn't think that there was anything that could address specifically some of the challenges that were being faced in terms of the access to capital for the amount that's needed for the loan in terms of percentages and stuff. But there were some programs that UConn Housing offered in the past that may be able to offer some quick relief. So I think that is part of the overall discussion with, in addition to the banks, is just looking at both the the short term, the only thing that could really work, I think, probably at this point, well, I shouldn't say only, but UConn Housing is a potential for bridging some of that gap. We are looking at other options as well too, in terms of, you know, other kinds of, you know, equity that could be offered. But definitely, yeah, it's definitely on the radar in terms of things that we should bring forward to UConn Housing, especially once the conversations with the banks are had.
Also, just to follow up with the JMR discussions, is there discussion there on how we navigate through this if we're not getting the engagement or like the pivoting of like how we're allocating some of this money or what those terms are, or if we're extending the program? I know there's a short period of window, like a short window period, but is there something that we could be doing or talking about that would alleviate some of that pressure and some of the owners to be getting?
I know that there has been talk about, there is another intake being planned right now. Probably won't be for another few months yet, but it is something that we're discussing right now. So maybe what I'll do is I'll invite Prince to say a few words on this too, because I know that he attended at the housing roundtable that was in Whitehorse last week. And so had a chance to talk directly to CMHC as well as UConn Housing, and had been, you know, been on this file a bit. So Prince, do you have anything to add on that front that relates to?
Mostly just they explain the timelines that we have to spend, that it's federal money we have to spend by this date. And regarding the reporting.
Well, they seem pretty firm that they weren't going to extend.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think a lot of this is TBD, Mayor LaChance. I think that it's gonna, yeah. I mean, I think yeah, more discussions have to be had, but it's we're kind of in a continuing to research phase right now.
Can I make a recommendation that we possibly have a meeting out maybe to MLA and the need of being here, maybe what putting UConn stronger looks like and moving forward with these types of things that we're trying to navigate?
For sure. Yeah. Any other questions?
That's it. So, well, thank you for your report, and we'll move on. Anything from Association of UConn Community?
No, it's pretty quiet for the summer.
All righty. Okay, and the other two, the bylaws were postponing. Did I hear that right? Okay, so do we have to do any? Nope. So we can move to 8.1, new and unfinished business. So
8.1's already
completed. So we'll go to 8.2.
Yeah, so I can speak to this. We received an email, the mayor and I both received an email for the Athabasca corridor, and this letter references a proposed, like in summary, references a proposed rail line that would be developed running between Alaska and, or between Alberta and Alaska. This was a project that was discussed prior to COVID and the beginning of COVID, and it wasn't the the prior version of this, or the prior management of this, was not a very good story. It was, you know, there was, it was kind of, yeah, seemed to be, you know, yeah, but not really a serious discussion. But this is coming back again. This is the first I've heard of it, that it's coming back again. So I honestly don't know much about this reiteration of this program or project, but they wrote a letter seeking support or interest from municipalities and chambers along the corridor. And the village is along the proposed corridor that they want to run. So this was, this was included in the package just out of, you know, diligence to be able to put it in front of council for discussion.
I do remember reading something.
This was a while back.
Yeah. But the way the article, like, it was happening.
Yeah.
Like, well, that's funny, since nobody around here knows anything about it.
Yeah.
I think that was maybe an item to add to the council meeting.
Yeah, that's a good call. Yeah. I can also raise this with Kelly on Thursday as part of our meeting, and propose that as well.
I don't remember where this came up before.
Okay. Imagine if it's still the same proposed route, that they would probably have come forward to council earlier, years ago, the last time around, to see if there was a letter of support. But I can check on this.
Alrighty. Okay, so do you make any motion, anything on this, or we'll just file it and move on? 8.3, balance biogas project update.
This is kind of tying up a loose end for the biogas project that was started. So Jonathan and his team did the compost program that council had directed administration move forward. So the composting program was done in the fall last year, I believe. And then the second part of that was potentially using the compost to fuel a degasifier that would basically power a small something or other close to the landfill. So this is the engagement was needed. It's a technical briefing with administration. We needed to do an engagement as part of the reporting requirements. So this was, I was away that day, but I asked both Annette and Friends to and Jens to sit in and discuss this with Jonathan and his team that were there. The overall takeaway is that it's not something that's a good fit for the village. It doesn't make sense on a logistical point of view. But I'll open it up to Annette and Prince if they wanted to add in kind of any comments from that meeting. Prince, I know you had some feedback for me on that one.
So I think it was just from the Jonathan and the team that they have to finish up the project, that the funding that they get from Kanur and Yukon government, 100,000. So they did the study. Yeah. They have to finish the study with the final.
The project conflicts. There's a number of conflicts. I mean, one of which is that there's just not enough compost generated from the village to make it viable. But the other part of that is that part of the biofuel burning would also, they factored in cardboard, and we get paid through circular systems for our cardboard, so it would actually be taking revenue away for this. So there was just a number of different.
No, tell you off. I think when we started this, that wasn't there.
Yeah.
About the cardboard that came in after.
Yeah.
So yeah, just sorry.
No, it's that. Makes sense. Yeah.
And we didn't get the final number, like how much.
We kept waiting for the final number.
To send a report, have you gotten anything? Or you? Did you send anything? Okay. But I think he was talking about, was it 4 million in total or something? And maybe 3 million funding, maybe. So, but we still need to come up with 1 million or more.
I really wanted to see this work to help get rid of some stuff out of the dump, but some of that stuff, the biggest one was the cardboard.
Yeah,
and now that's happened. So I'm sad because but it is what it is. We can't afford it.
I can just add to that piece about the house biogas. As the as everything's kind of transpired from the beginning, the original intent was talking about engage other communities around this word around. So I'm wondering if we could reach out to biogas, Bounce Biogas, in regards to how they're advocating to their communities around us, how it would impact and reducing some of its costs, and what that looks like projected for us if you want to continue to have the project. But as of what I see right now, what we have gotten out of Balanced Biogas is really good for the community. It's cleaned up a lot of waste, of like food waste, houses and stuff. But I would like to see us moving forward with continuing just that piece of compost. Which works.
Yeah, I think, the compost program, I think that they're, especially even seasonally, there may be something more to that. I think the overall degasifier project, it didn't really, again, like the logistics don't really add up, even with the numbers that we'd be talking about with surrounding communities. But I get, definitely, we can kind of float that and see. It's a I think on the composting side, I guess it would be kind of just working with the different departments to see what that would look like that forward. So yeah, we can follow up on that.
The second piece to that would be, moving forward, this is kind of relates to our possible garbage pickup or compost pickup type of conversation that we've been having to have those services to village taxpayers, and how that can coincide with like picking up and relieving some of what we're trying to collect. Because if we're just relying on people bringing it to us, it doesn't seem that it's paying off in that way as if we were to go and get it and actually put the effort into making that worse.
Okay. Yeah. We can we can incorporate that into the proposal that we put into I guess it's not called CCBF anymore.
Something we could bring up with the First Nation joint meeting too, right?
Yeah, exactly. Because I think more than half of our waste does come from LSCFN.
Right.
And it's picked up unsorted. So
does the host get involved?
I agree.
The rest of, not just hotel to restaurants, like
not right now. They don't do commercial.
Can I just ask a question off of this? Is that has it been explored like other avenues about composting, like private composting for gardening, that kind of stuff? Has that been something, just building off of this conversation? I don't want to.
Yeah, not really. Yeah,
I think someone brought it up, but it really never went nowhere.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, we can explore all options on the table when it comes to composting. I think that, if there's, I think it's a worthwhile endeavor to look at.
Well, in the open meeting and the community meeting, people were so, I don't know what the word to use is, but they were pretty excited about it. They were all, it seemed like a lot of the community was really wanting to get involved, but I know to collect it and then dump it if you come back. Another garbage bag up to the dump. So
why don't we do this? We can will go away, and administration will come up with some recommendations on composting in terms of just how we move forward from this program, and kind of like, you know, if there's you know, how we can kind of do things on the composting front.
But like Tara said, getting a hold of the First Nation, but I think we should even get the businesses, because if we're needing more, what more are you going to get from the businesses, you know, like,
yeah.
I don't know. That just means speaking out loud. I don't know if that should, but.
That's a good idea.
I'll jump on that. Our deputy mayor influence that. Isn't a little bit of public engagement on what the public sees as fit to what they want to, how they want to use it? Because the way I see it is we have a compound which is secured, which can hold the product, and we would like to be able to possibly ask the public about access to that, because they are able to use the grubbing piles and stuff like that. It's this rolls into this, like, if you have a program put out where we're collecting this, and then have a piece where it's accessible to them to reuse, is being housed with us. So, you know, and it alleviates them from keeping, which was part of the conversation from the start, is them having compost piles at their houses, like, kind of danger piece, right? So that's a conversation to have, to see what way we want to go about helping alleviate that access.
Yeah, we can follow up on that.
Hey, anything else on the biogas? Move on. Okay, 8.4, key for contractor.
Yeah, so this item was raised with me today. It's there are contractors. So just to kind of explain the issue. So there are contractors that are responsible for cleaning up some of the YG parks in the area. And they often have loads of garbage that they aren't able to unload if it's collected during the weekend. So it's kind of sitting around as a bear attractant until if there's no staff on. And so there was, in the past, there's been contractors that have been able to lease keys to the landfill to be able to access the landfill when they're like on their own time. And so the question was whether or not that could still continue. I think the issue that was raised is that because we have a new scale in place, it complicates the system a little bit, which is why the lock was changed at that point. So I discussed this with Jens, and even though the keys were provided before, my understanding is that the system didn't really work very well. It kind of, when there weren't any staff on hand, sometimes things kind of just, you know, it wasn't really, I guess there were some issues logistically when staff would arrive back. The recommendation is that we don't lease out keys, but that if people are needing to unload loads such as that there's usually people on, usually people, staff from public works available who could be on call to be able to let people into the dump, into the landfill. And so that's something that we can work to try to address those needs. But having unfettered access to the landfill may be problematic, because it really comes back to really putting it really, it doesn't, it, it lends to a, an unstructured system if there's people just coming by. So
when last time too, then everybody started coming for a key.
That's what I was going to say. You give that person a key, and then the Yukon Housing one, and the LSCFN, and then Coal Mine Campground has a lot of garbage in the summer.
What's happened at our place was guys are coming after hours because the key hangs in the office.
Oh, okay.
And then they're doing their own thing after hours. So it wasn't even for YTG anymore.
Right.
So I understand the bear problem and you want to be safe, but I agree with you. You start handing out the keys, it's not going to stop.
We do think that it's possible to put a solution in place by having a process in place for staff to be on call when to be able to address those needs, and just being able to communicate that with the contracting community so that they do have an avenue for being able to dispose of it as much as we hope.
Well, with YTG, well, not to cut you off, 1 hour, 15 minutes less called out is 4 hours pay.
Right.
That's how it is with YTG. Now, I don't know how it is with the Village of Carmax when you guys are called out.
Three hours.
So there you go.
Okay.
Well, usually the public works guys are, they're someone scheduled every day anyway. So it could be, if you're using it on a Sunday, it has to be between this time and this time when they regularly do building checks. Like, not an on-call of, like, whenever you are...
I'll have to have a buy at midnight.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
but I tell you, we had to pull this. I don't know if I should bring this up here, but we had to get that guy to cover his trailer. We're picking up a lot of garbage down the highway.
Yeah.
You know, so he's a hell of a nice guy, but you can't be hauling with an open trailer. But I don't know how it works. I know Dale had to have a key because of his place. Does he still have one?
No.
Will the locks be changed? So
yeah. So
I can start training here. I'm agreeing with like the structure piece how facility works. I do believe that there can be a letter that they sign off on a policy that we provide, that we have some of these policies already in place that they are held to. If they don't do the proper procedures, then we can create some of those procedures and say they're taking a picture before and after this. They're liable for what they're bringing in. I believe we have a camera there also, so it's not like we can't see who it is or what's being used. And it's not like it's contractors that are listed under the village of Carmen's. So it's not somebody that we're not doing this regular business with. So I think we can best see that, like, you know, they're using it as their business and personal items. And more or less, we're talking about the safety of the public. Like campsites right now, like people aren't throwing fish guts and stuff like that into the environment. They're picking it and they're putting it in garbage bags, and those garbage bags are campground for more than 3 or 4 days. It's an unsafe environment for anybody that's passing through our community. So I think that's something to be said for the safety part of it. And I think it's just a minor policy change on how we provide access to the facility. And
I guess, I mean, from a logistical point of view, I don't know why it would be problematic to have staff on call to be able to provide that access, though. It seems like it's, and I mean, if the communication was put out there for contractors to be able to know when they can dump, it would, you know, I mean, I think the only day at this point that they're not able to is Sunday. So it could be
it's that holidays.
I mean,
may I say something? Yep. We actually told all the contractors that used to have a key that, like, no one is on call, like, technically on Sunday, like in the during the summertime.
Yes,
but they can call public works on Monday and they will open it up. And that's what they did, even with the parks guy.
Yeah, but they need to do
it. I just want to chime in. I think the problem that we're dealing with here on the public piece is that the accessibility of when they need it than being. And I think we could do a lot better. It's like this was already in place, it was working, and now something's changed. We were told when it's changed. So I'd like to see something go out where we review the policies of what we're dealing with at the facility and then update it from there.
Based on what the conversations I had with staff is that it wasn't working in the past, though. So I mean, we can come back with basically just, you know, more kind of confirmation of that and come up with some options for sure. But I just don't know how it would change anything from where it was before.
The accountability piece, though, like that's what I'm talking about, like how they're accessing is the accountability piece. If they're not, they're going to be charged a minimum rate or whatever we provide in policy. That would deter them from abusing the systems.
Do we have a camera there?
No, we don't.
Okay.
I thought the camera was installed. But I do feel for, like, I shouldn't bring up the name of Dale, but anybody, Eric and whatnot. And like you said, that guy, he's got to get those garbage. He's got to get the garbage out. Otherwise, we're going to have animal problems, especially bears. So I do feel for them, but I just wonder if they schedule around hours.
But, you know, let's
also add in that, like, this is, we are listed from YGG. And the person that's come forward works for YGG. So it's like, maybe there's something we can reach out to as a perspective of the government as it is the land law. So, like, how access is utilized, because that's basically the main purpose of us having this.
Yeah, we don't want bears in town, that's for sure.
Yeah. I mean, one other thing I could do is, I mean, I can reach out to other communities that have scales and would have similar type, you know, yeah, to see what times. They do. Yeah. Because, I mean, maybe there's something that we're missing here, like a part of the system that they have kind of work to crack that nut a little bit. I just don't want to create more work for staff showing up and you know, potentially having everything a mess if we don't have cameras there and there's no, and it's based on, you know, and to be straight up, like, they're 9 out of 10 contractors may be great with it, it may be fine, but it's just the one that you don't just know that ends up ruining it for everybody. So no, and this isn't saying anything about any particular kind.
Like the one person dumping 10 feet from the burn.
Yeah, I mean, and maybe the issue was just with one contractor that may not even be operating anymore. So I think that there's definitely more follow-up on this that can be done to kind of look into it a bit more, and, you know, happy to do that.
Also, the liability of allowing access and something happens.
Well, that's the whole reason why we locked the dump, was liability.
Yeah, some guy's dumping his stuff. He falls in, breaks it there overnight. Because nobody knows what time he's there or what's going on. So
yeah, I've had accidents in the landfill. So I mean, I
it's a hairy one.
I guess I would suggest that we look into possibly the camera situation and our insurance policies on what we can and how that's, you know,
yeah, I think that's a good starting point.
Because we had the Sunday, Monday, Tuesday dump closed, wasn't that 3 days?
Yeah.
That's a lot of garbage for these businesses.
Yeah, I know.
Like I said, they can call. Like, we told them, like, Public Works is, like, working on Monday, Tuesday. Again.
Well, again, like, we'll look into what it would mean for camera and insurance and whatnot. But I really think that connecting with other CAOs from other communities to see how they do this, and just looking at the history of this to see kind of what the issue might have been and what we can do to potentially troubleshoot it. I can take that back to the administration and we can talk about it a bit more and come back with some recommendations for council next time.
Thank you, Blake.
You're welcome. Yeah.
Good. Okay. So that's that. Question period. Is anybody on? No questions? All right.
I will make a motion to go in camera at 8:27 p.m.
Am I allowed to second or anything? You're going to second there, Justin?
Yeah, I'll second.